The Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on Apple Podcasts and at NFL.com/DDFP. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello, football fans. I hope all's well wherever you are. I hope you enjoyed the weekend of pro football action here in Studio 66. We're positively over the moon because walking through that door in just a matter of moments, comedy great Bill Burr, one of my very favorites, a guy who anytime you see him as a guest on a late night show, you want to make sure you watch that one because he's among the very best in the 21st century. Beyond that, his series on Netflix, F is for Family, is dynamite and perhaps the best season yet. It's him, Laura Dern, Sam Rockwell, Justin Long, Vince Vaughn, Haley Reinhardt, Kevin Farley, so on and so forth. He's in a movie now with Hugh Jackman. It's the front runner. It's the story of Gary Hart in back in the late 80s. He's going on tour across Europe in January. So make sure you look at BillBurr.com. I'm doing that just out of passion, just to promote Bill Burr. Let's hear from the man, shall we? He's coming through momentarily. The great, even though he's a New England Patriots fan, Bill Burr.
Dave Dameshek.
Hey, look who it is, everybody. It's Bill Burr, and there's a lot of things I want to tell you about. His hysterical series you must watch, F is for Family, on Netflix, the best season yet of that one. You are also a dramatic actor as well, accomplished. Of course, everybody knows you from Breaking
Bad. You say a dramatic sports fan, like I blow everything out of proportion.
Now, we'll get into that in a minute. We'll see about all that. But the front runner, along with Hugh Jackman.
Vera Farmiga, all kinds of Jason Reitman. That's a great, great movie.
Yeah.
Please don't let that get buried in all your Superman, Aquaman movies. Jesus Christ. How many more of those things can they make?
That's true, yeah.
That's what I like to do while I promote my movies is on other genres.
Especially since the star of the movie has achieved a great deal of wealth, if nothing else, because he was Wolverine.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
I didn't get into his finances. I could just say he's a hell of an actor.
Have you ever, because as you've broken out as an actor, has anybody approached you about perhaps playing one of the superheroes?
I just want to. Can I give you money for saying that I've broken out as an actor? I'm always like 20 something on the call list, which is the sweet spot. You're on the movie for about 8 days. You get in, you get out, you see your kids grow up.
I heard you talking on Conan O'Brien's podcast recently, and you were talking about that. Yeah, I'm with you. Good-looking people, that's their value, is appearing and being
starring
our stars.
In movies.
Our
yes.
Matinee idols, that's what we want
yes.
out of
I'm
them.
I'm not saying I won't watch somebody ugly, but don't get mad if you go on film and you're ugly or you're fat and somebody calls you that. I mean, like me. I'm a bald, red-headed male. You don't think I get it every day? Oh, my God. Hey, you think they don't call me a tub of
Who are the kept men ultimately anyway? Brando proved the point when he let himself go that's the prison
Dude,
that they're
DeLuise.
In now.
Dom DeLuise was always second banana. He finally got to star in a movie. It was called Fatso. So, I don't know what to tell you.
The other guys, Jackman and company, they're always having to work out and everything. So that's the price they have to pay.
Yes, and the way they eat and all of that, those guys that getting up. You saw that thing on Wahlberg. The guy gets up at the gym at like 3 in the morning.
Think that's a fun life to live? It's not. You know,
I think they're rich. I think you got to be wired a certain way. No, there's dedication and discipline to that. And there's a bunch of people who want to just not have discipline and eat Oreo cookies and show up and have everybody say, you're beautiful. You're not.
I want to make sure I also mention. You just played MSG and you're hitting the road from January to May, all over the UK and Europe. Doing I think those one, are the one, same things, but
yeah, one week of 1 week, you know, per month, basically. Yeah, the UK is what is that? That's England, Wales. Northern
Scotland.
Ireland and Scotland, yeah.
But it's a
and
part of
it. And then Scandinavia. No, you learn all the subsets. Scandinavia is Sweden, Norway, and Denmark, and they're part of the Nordic countries that include Scandinavia, Finland, some f***ing island north of
the UK or something like that. So those are things you learn when you travel.
Trying to think of what that island is. Anyway, are you surprised? It's a rainy day here. It's pouring rain. Isn't it weird? Nothing to me speaks more to the ability of a human being to rationalize than to live somewhere in the United States other than Southern California. Do you know? Because this is what people deal with regularly outside of Southern California, and it feels like a misery. You can make the choice to live here. This is continental U.S.
But then we have earthquakes, we have the fires, and all of that. So
yeah, but then you have hurricanes, tornadoes.
Yeah, no, but it all balances out.
When you talk about Europe, it makes me think of. I also was listening to you on your own podcast, Monday Morning Podcast, and you were talking about George H.W. Bush. And the stories that you were telling were great about him as the 19-year-old, 20-year-old pilot. Remarkable stuff. And people too often say stuff like, I can't imagine. Yeah, you can imagine. That's what makes it grim. Is how awful.
And I quoted the wrong book. It's a book called Flyboys, where they interview George Herbert Walker Bush, and he tells about that mission, just flying. I mean, you know, having a private pilot's license. I mean, just flying around in general. It's always scary. I can't imagine that some people shooting at you and another plane coming out of nowhere and just, you know, and you could burn up. There was all kind of, get taken prisoner was even worse back then. I'll tell you, that book, Flyboys, is not for the faint of heart. Like, there was a bunch of stuff that they did to pilots because they hated pilots back then. They thought they were cowards. It's a new technology. Mm-hmm. It's like we're on the ground going face to face and you're flying over. So when they caught them, it was, it was just unspeakable stuff that they did to
Yeah, it really is. And I also enjoyed the fact that the remedy for the emotional scars that yielded was booze, was whiskey.
Yeah, he said in the book, I don't want to ruin the whole book, but President Bush said you would come back. You're like a 19-year-old kid. The guy in your bunk is no longer there. You came back. You were like so in shock. He said some higher up came up to him and said, how you doing, son? And he opened his mouth and nothing came out. And he goes, that's all right, son. Go down to sick bay. And you go down to sick bay and they give you like two or three fingers of whiskey. And you take a belt and President Bush goes, the funny thing was it worked. Kind of came around. But I can't imagine trying to go to sleep. I mean, it combines so much. And then you're on a boat, and any second you could, you know, get torpedoed. You're in the water, sharks.
And those people still walk among us, too.
He did. Yeah, there's not many left. But mm-hmm. He did that at 19, 20 years old. And, yeah, I mean, I don't know how you come out of that one.
Well, I admire.
Somehow did.
You go out of your way to perform for cops, for the troops, and so on.
And I make fun of them when I do, and they love it.
I love that you do it. And I think but as far as that goes, when I say, you know, George H.W. Bush went through all that, and I mean, it really is, grave stuff that hopefully our generation and our kids' generations don't have to deal with, but probably will. But either way.
They are. We've been at war for 15 years.
Yeah, absolutely right. Touche. Yeah, shame on me. But does it occur to you that the range of human emotion is limited enough that those soldiers who go through that stuff still get as nervous as they do? And I've talked to a bunch of them about this, cops, soldiers, whatever, about sports. Isn't it weird that they how? What do you care? What do you care if this, whether your team wins? Oh, I'm so nervous. I hope we score. What do you care? You were in war, man. What are you nervous about?
Because you're so emotionally invested in it. I mean, it really is sort of the first reality television that is really, you know, that is reality. You know, some people who say it's fixed would say it's reality assisted reality or whatever. But yeah, I've said that. You know, as a Boston fan, it could not have gone any better in my life. Like if all the four Boston teams just sucked for the rest of my life, I still won as a fan, and I still just like you know, I just hang on to stuff, and like I can't watch certain things. Like I'll never watch that Patriots-Eagles Super Bowl again.
Is that right? That one plagues you after all the great deeds by 12 and company.
Well, also, it reminds me of how old I am, that football is played that way now. The fact that anybody on defense in that game got a ring is just – it's a travesty to all the great defense. I mean, it's just how the game is played now. I feel like, you know,
it's quaint by comparison to 2018. That now we're getting 54-51. That was just 41-33.
Yeah, no, but that's the thing. I think the NFL, they're a business, and I think they got all the fans that they're going to get. Now they got to get the casual fan, and that's offense. And all of them have done it, hockey with the stretch passes and all that stuff, just going up and down the rink. You know, I hope this is just like a growing pain thing and they do dial it back where there will be some sort of defense because, you know, I'm a big Dan Marino, Elway era fan, and watching these everybody going out and having these seasons that are like, I mean, this is like Marino in 84. It's like, no, it isn't.
You're right. That's exactly right.
Those guys would throw for, like, specifically Dan Marino in 84, and he threw for over, like, almost 5,800 yards, like 48 touchdown passes, whatever he had that year. That guy would throw for 6,000 yards, no problem.
That's right. It's the
measure. He almost did it in 84.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly the point.
Just got rid of Stickum. So.
Gold is precious because it's rare. And what Marino did that season was at that point, no one had ever seen anything like it. Remember watching the games?
The guys would tackle a quarterback and then go up and drive him to the ground. Now these guys hit a quarterback, and as they're tackling him, they're doing this as they're coming down trying to roll off of him. It's like
we're numb to it now because, yeah, when you were watching that 84 season, it seemed like Marino, it was made your head spin because it seemed like he was throwing a touchdown pass every play, but now we're numbed every drive. But yeah, everybody is putting up those kind of numbers.
My favorite football game I ever saw, that I ever saw on the pro level was Marino versus the Bears, that Monday Night Football game,
yeah,
where he beat the 46 defense. And now years later, I saw in that Football Life where they were talking about his release, arm comes up, ball comes out. I mean, you watch it, you're still going like they had to have sped up that film. It's just like it goes like that and it's out.
It
just comes out and it's gone. And the fact that he could somehow bring it up and still bring it back far enough where he could launch it 65 yards if he had to was, I mean, and I'm a Patriots fan watching. They used to come up, you know.
I was just going to say.
Kick our ass twice a year.
If not for your Patriots, go Mosey Tatupu and Craig James and that crew.
Rest his soul, yeah.
Yeah, going down to the Orange Bowl in 84 in the title game, it would have been Marino against the Bears again in that Super Bowl.
That's one of the great Super Bowls that never never happened.
If you guys wouldn't have done that, if you wouldn't have sent Champagne Tony. Yeah, 85. Right, the season after Montana v. Marino, you almost had.
For the record, we were up 3-0 in that Super Bowl.
People forget that. People forget
Tony
that.
Tony Franklin.
Also, people forget that Eagles. Stanley Morgan almost caught a touchdown pass up the left sideline early in that game, too. But then we'll ignore the rest. By the way, when you were name-dropping Marino and Elway, you left off Champagne Tony from that list. Champagne Tony was also Tony in that Easton. First round. Yeah, he was.
Oh, yeah, Tony Easton, Ken O'Brien, and all that. Yeah. There's a lot of people that could have had Marino. Yes, sir.
What do you think? So you look back at those highlights and you see, you know, not very good teams. There were some great moments for Patriots fans. And all happened with that great Pat Patriot logo on the side and the red jerseys and everything else. And now I feel like the luster of this dynasty run that Brady and company are on is a little marred by the flying Elvis. True or false?
Oh, you don't like the uniform?
No.
I have a weird thing with that. Whenever Brady puts on the Pat Patriot one, I'm just – unless they wear black cleats, then it looks like the old AFL and I like it. But when they wear that with the white cleats, it just reminds me of losing. So I'm just like, oh, don't get that stink on you, man. Stay with the new ones, the Bledsoe Parcells, when we started turning it around. By the way, Bob Kraft, three greatest coach, you know, has there ever been an owner hired better? First three coaches, Parcells, Pete Carroll, Bill Belichick. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, he's on a run, and I can't really as a Steelers fan because my team has stolen so many souls over the decades, and yet I feel bad. I'd love to get into a back and forth in front of Steelers and Patriots again, but it would be, I'd be fraudulent in trying to do it because the Patriots are Tom Brady at least owns the Pittsburgh Steelers. I don't like saying that, but it's the truth.
It's also, you know, also the coaching staff and the game plan that they come up with. But I don't know a Patriot fan out there that doesn't love Big Ben, though. I mean,
I picked that up from you, listening to you a little bit. I'm surprised by that. You guys admire Seven, the gunslinger, over Tom Brady, the surgeon?
Because he takes the hits, and he's just like, he's like an old school guy. You know, he's got a little bit of, you know, looks like he has a couple of beers every once in a while.
That's right.
He looks like an old school quarterback to me. And he's like he could have played back in the day when they hit you. And actually, you know, in the beginning part of his career, I believe you still could, at least a lot more. I did Boomer's show, and he was talking about when he played for the Bengals, you know, because they played in the Cincinnati Reds stadium. He was saying they used to cover up, they had that awful AstroTurf. They used to cover up home plate with a piece of plywood, put a little bit of foam rubber, and then the grass over. He said he'd be landing on somebody's tree fort. with like a 300-pound guy on top of you. So
that was a funny era too, because at the time I remember thinking, "Well, this is state of the art." You know, like they have the AstroTurf. They don't have that crummy natural
turf.
I thought grass was corny. Right, exactly. And now when you see games, it's almost hard to watch old games or old highlights. You think like, what ridiculousness is that they're playing on an actual piece of carpet?
Oh, they used to get the turf toe. They get the burns, and they everybody always talked about.
They would wear sneakers. They would wear high tops. They would wear like, I remember they would wear like Adidas high tops or like Magic Johnson style, Larry Bird style high tops in the game, in football games. That was weird.
Yeah, it was a weird time.
Tony Eason wore it. I remember he specifically, he wore those Adidas high tops out there on the field. Who do you, so we talk Big Ben. Surely you might respect him, but you don't fear the Steelers at this point. Do you fear a team in the AFC?
No, that guy, you know. Absolutely. Oh, this year? Oh, my God. Absolutely. The last thing any Patriot, I would say, I don't want to speak for everybody. I don't want to go back into Kansas City and try to beat him again. I don't. And all of a sudden, the Texans are coming on. There's a lot of teams. Like, you know, I feel like, well, this year we're kind of rebuilding because we lost our best running back, our top two receivers, our left tackle, and one of our best cornerbacks. So this is the latest in the season where we've that I can remember in recent memory where we're still trying to figure out who we are. You know what I mean? And like, you know, because we always, every year, it's just like we lose a game. It seems like we lose to the Chiefs or something. And people are like, it's over. The dynasty is over. And then all of a sudden, October, we start figuring it out. And by November, mid-November, we're just shutting people down. And I know we just beat the Vikings and everything, but we also had that horrific loss.
I've never seen that. I agree with you about that. I don't remember there being... I guess I could go on the computer and look it up and disprove what I think. But, yeah, I can't recall a Belichick-Brady team getting housed the way they did in Tennessee
just a couple weeks ago. No answers.
Yeah.
Although, you never know with Belichick. That might have been on purpose just to throw people off the scent. Because you know that thing he does about tendencies? You ever see that?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he'll do something late in the game when he knows the game won. He'll just do something completely out of left field so people's algorithms don't work out. I mean, he's thinking that far ahead, so I don't think he'd tank a game. But.
Are you mad at him for all the glory that he has provided you in your heart? Are you angry at him for benching Malcolm Butler? Because you surely would have won that Super Bowl if Butler would have played.
I don't think you could say surely would have won. No.
Yeah, he would have. Well, in a 41-33 game, he would have made one play. Malcolm Butler would have made one play at least somewhere over 60 minutes that would have.
And then they adjust to the fact that he's in the game. It's just like I just felt. I got a kid now. I don't know any of the names. Who's the Eagles quarterback?
Nick Foles.
Yeah, he just came out. He just was slinging that like he was playing catch in the park. The first one he came out, he wasn't scared. They were clicking, and like, you know, we let up, what, 40-something points? I mean, I think whatever Belichick is doing, it seems to be working. So I'm not going to sit here and nitpick and be that idiot fan who never coached on any level.
Good for you.
Questioning that what he did in a Super Bowl.
So you feel satiated. You're not like these Boston fans who swore.
I don't know what that word means, but he has 7 Super Bowl rings.
He does?
Yes.
Oh, right. You get that with the...
That's why I knew they were going to beat the Rams. I had a good feeling we'd beat the Rams. I was at that game. I was sitting there, and all the Rams fans were being like, you know, it's just a scrimmage. What'd you show up for? But blah, 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 blah. And I was thinking, like, this guy shut down the running gun of the Bills as the defensive coordinator. And then he also shut down Elway and the Fun Bunch or whatever they used to call each other in 86. Both times they had, like, a team that would win games 19-17, which is what we were.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going up against the greatest show on turf and all of that. And I still didn't believe it. But I was walking down the street, Bourbon Street, talking trash.
I remember it was the best. That was the but I'm sick. That game makes me sick as much as any because I had my tickets in advance because the Steelers were supposed to make quick work of your Patriots.
Oh, that's right. You guys had your hotel rooms. That's the urban myth that you guys had your hotel and the team had already booked their flights and all. But, of course, you probably would have. I think most teams would have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of a sudden to try to get 50 seats on a Southwest Airlines. I mean, I think you want to get ahead of that, don't you?
Yeah, that's right. Well, listen, it makes me sick that you twice, not once, but twice have come into Heinz Field. Brady and company have come in and left with a...
But that's just going to make it better when you finally beat us. Who knows? It might be this year. It might be when... You want to do it when the guys that are kicking your ass are still there, though. I do that because I'm a Michigan fan,
mm-hmm.
and now that Urban Meyer left, you know, I was hoping Harbaugh was going to get him while he's while he was still there.
That's exactly right. I think can't be Michigan fans, the ones that over the past week have been out there saying like, oh, Wolverines fans are over the moon that that Urban left. No, they didn't get him. If we don't, that's what's going to make me sick about it. And I thought last year should have been a touchdown. Jesse James.
That was totally a touchdown.
You agree.
It's ridiculous.
If that
had counted. Rule, that's a fumble. It's a stupid rule. It was a correct call.
Look at you. I like that.
Yeah, I'm not one of those idiot fans. You know, and for Raider fans all out there who was like, even the Patriots fans committed, Ray Hamilton, that was not roughing the passer in 77. So that was a makeup call for that. So we're even. And both of us won a Super Bowl. So quit crying up there.
You are exactly right. I have nothing to add to that because that's exactly what it was. It was justice being delivered by the football gods a generation later.
77, it was a bad call. And 2000, 2001, that was a bad rule.
Yep.
The tuck rule is stupid. You brought it down to here. That's a fumble. Okay? And people catching balls and starting to run with it is a catch. But did he make a football move? I mean, isn't catching a ball a football rule? A move?
Yes.
I don't know. I don't understand it.
I suspect in 2017, if that touchdown counts and then you guys have to play the Jags in the divisional round and the Steelers get the cupcake Titans in the divisional round and then you guys have to pay a visit to Heinz Field, that I think the Steelers would have taken care of business. But that
you're big on that. You're big on a lot
on
of things. The what ifs. You live in the what if world.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
It's a weird place to live.
All right. Listen.
I live in the what happened.
I want to hear from you about favorite player of all time. If you're a diehard Boston guy, and there's some
of all time.
Yeah, because there's some. I grew up. I like Jim Rice, by the way. I thought he was cool.
I ever bought for Mitchell and Ness. The thing I got a Jim Rice. I got
really?
The road jersey with the 14. No, it was
14.
Home,
yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm just thinking if his name was on the. That's the home jersey. It said. I think did it say Red Sox or Boston? I can't remember, but it's a cool one. It's that pullover.
The pullover,
one
yeah. It says Red Sox on the home jersey, yeah.
Oh, God.
I mean, Boston really does have high-end, like, legends.
This is a good question for a passive fan. But, like, I can tell you why I love certain teams, like 2004 teams. Everything from, obviously, Big Poppy, Manny Ramirez, to the Pine Tower and Trot Nixon's, you know, helmet. I mean, I can't really just pick any one. I can pick a bunch, you know, all the different Bruins teams that I love because I was really a big hockey guy growing up. Once I saw that you could fight in a sport and you only had to sit down for 5 minutes. And the 80s was a golden age in hockey.
It really was.
It was the perfect combination of enforcers and finesse players and how in the quirkiness of hockey where, like, our arena was smaller than somebody else's and how Edmonton would come to town, you know, in the finals and we'd make the ice a little more mushy trying to slow them down. And then you go up there and it would be frigid. And, I don't know. I mean, you'd have to pick a genre. My favorite enforcer of all time is Jay Miller. He was my favorite.
He was good. Who's the best pugilist that you can? I remember to me the best I've ever seen, and I saw Bob Probert and I saw them all. But I feel like Georgie LaRocque
I would say he's the modern Probert. It's just as far as like he just wasn't going to lose.
Who would win that fight, Probert v. LaRocque?
Well, you're comparing two different eras, level of fitness and nutrition, and then also Probert, you know, he liked to tailgate a little bit, so I don't know.
Yeah, he did. Georgie LaRocque was dispassionate almost about it. Like, all right, we're going to do good luck to you. He would actually – you ever see the videos of him wishing luck to the guys about – want to go? Okay, good luck. And then he drops the gloves, and he never lost. I never saw him lose a fight.
No, and he won definitively. So I would say he was the most dominant.
Who's your least favorite guy then?
As far as
in sports, who Peyton is another guy you can't probably summon hatred for because he didn't really break your heart that much. You really
no, I would say what I love what finally as a Patriots fan, you just inherently hated the Colts because it was a rival. I don't literally hate the guy, but my thing with Peyton was he could have when he left Indianapolis, he could have piled on with Harbaugh and those guys in San Francisco because they were right there, and he just I think that's a pretty far as what if I think automatic ring that would have been. Pretty easy. Instead, he went to the Broncos, and Ernie went there. He got crushed by the Seahawks, and then didn't let that get him down. He came back, and then he got that second one. That put him over the top. I think even if you're just completely hating on Peyton, I mean, I think that put him over. So
a guy who a lot of people feel like they've already decided that they hate for his behavior. I personally like Phil Rivers, by the way, for being outspoken and saying stuff. He's one of the few guys in the at least quarterbacks who have mistaken themselves to be senatorial candidates that they can't say anything because it'll be bulletin board and it'll make. And then Ben Roethlisberger
does it. He
also
has like 9 kids, so I think he really has. You know, he's really going to be a big influence on a major portion of San Diego's population. He's got to make sure he's toeing the line.
But so, and then Roethlisberger, you know, critiques a rookie wide receiver, how he ran the route, and now he's a bad guy. He's a villain in Pittsburgh, at least. But Baker Mayfield goes up. Did you see the stuff with Hugh Jackson a couple weeks ago that he did after the game?
I love Baker Mayfield.
I love that. I mean, I'm in a position where I'm inherently, he's now going to be my foe for another decade.
But you've seen a Cleveland Brown.
That's cool,
with
yeah.
Swagger, and he's bringing them to life, and seeing Browns fans getting to cheer. One of my good buddies is a, you know, diehard Cleveland fan. So, and he's just, you know, he's just going, you know, he's going through it. I mean, they actually had, like, you know, we haven't won since Obama's been in president. I mean, they were like living that life. So, you know, as much as, you know, I'm going to hate watching Brady, you know, retire and Belichick leave one day. I am, you know, I don't wish misery on other people, so I hope it'll be the Browns or you know, Kansas City hasn't won in a long time. Lions haven't won ever. Well, 55, Bobby Lane, you know, so I root for those fan bases, you know.
I'm with you. I think, a final four of the Bills, they have the best, outside of seeing the Steelers win, I'd most like to see the Bills fans win. They show up on home games, they show up on Friday night and start tailgating. They just park their RVs in that lot next to the stadium.
That's because they don't want to remember the game. Yeah, they're animals. I went to a game there one time. They were playing the Jets, and I was rooting for them. I had a Patriots hat on. I went in the men's room. It was not a good scene. It's not a good scene. I was just like, ew, am I gonna get out of here alive? Yeah, they were animals.
By the way, our mutual pal Kent Brown, who's back there behind the glass, he tells me you've been to pretty much every stadium, ballpark, arena that there is in Sports America.
In all four, yeah, been to Formula One, Kentucky Derby.
Really?
Masters. I've been to 3 of the 4 tennis majors.
What are the
24
ones?
24 Hours Le Mans. I've been to a Premier League soccer game. Yeah, it's what I do when I'm on the road. So I don't, you know, it gives me something to do as opposed to just sitting in a hotel room being lonely.
I heard your story about New York City, too. And that's right. That's how Chicago is as well. If you're 25, there are a few places on the planet Earth to be living with some pals is in Chicago. But I suspect it's a very different life that once you get to be about 50. What city is the best one to live in at our general age now? We're not 25 anymore.
Oh, at our general age, best thing you do is get married. and have people you can come home to that care about you. You know, just as far as a comedian, you don't want to be that guy that just stays out there and then, you know, you're having a good set. You know, you put Coleman Grecian formula into your beard. Hey, ladies, trying to suck in your gut, you know, wearing your John Varvatos, trying to be cool in your 50s clothes. You don't want to do that, man. You got to go Brooks Brothers at some point.
What are the ones you got to get to? You can pick 3. Give me 3. Like, if you can, if you have your pick of the litter, what ballparks, what sporting events should you definitely get to in your lifetime?
Oh, goodness. Oh, my God. Kentucky Derby. A big-time college football game. I went to LSU, Alabama, in Baton Rouge.
That's the one in college football that people seem to hold up.
And I'll tell you, I went to Duke, Carolina at Camden Indoor. Like I've never been to anything like that in my life. I mean, that rivaled being watching the Patriots win their first Super Bowl. That's how crazy it was. I mean, you came in, nobody was sitting down, and the whole game, and it was just jam packed in. It was this old school little barn, and I mean, I came out of there, my ears were ringing. Like I saw Judas Priest back in the day. I remember my first concert, I saw them, and I came out, my ears were like ringing for like a day, and it was just from people screaming and going nuts. So, you know, I got to see Jason Tatum, one and done there, and now he's a Celtic. So I'd say, though, but there's also, you know, if you get into racing, Formula One, That's like the Illuminati sport. I'm telling you, dude. Like, you want to talk about, like, just next-level wealth and beautiful women? Like, these guys with yachts and stuff, and then, like, these giant praying mantis-looking seven-foot beautiful women. You're just like, what is that? I mean, I felt like, what's that movie where everybody with the blue people in space? What's that called?
Avatar.
Yeah. Avatar, yeah. It was like that, but they were people.
It is a weird thing. Is the guys they're the guys you just described, the guys who are in their 50s in the Varvatos cool outfits.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to
look like they're still playing a band or something. Oh, and just creeping out these people in their 20s. That's the thing. Like, you really gotta, like, I am really big on just being your age. That's the best way to age, is just be your age, you know, and then, you know, try to keep yourself in shape, you know, drink a couple of smoothies, you know. Then you look good for your age. That's the best you can hope for. But these idiots on TV, you know what I mean, taking their back hair, stapling it into their head so they can go swimming with their highlights. It's just like, you just look weird.
Like, well, I will say, now I have a flesh yarmulke back here. It's just you know, I have a patch of bald.
I can't see it.
It's not, yeah, because I use the there's this dust I pour in there. I see. Then I also am a hypocrite because I think that people who get the plastic surgery. It's funny, you're in LA enough that you see those women who have a certain age decide to get their faces. They all end up looking exactly the same.
Well,
that's crazy.
First of all, there's a stereotype that only goes on here. The most plastic surgery I've seen, Miami, Dallas, and Anaheim.
I agree with you about in Texas, yes. In those two big cities, in Houston and Dallas, there's a lot
of crazy. Anaheim's nuts, where even like the guys, you know, back in the day, Bruce Jenner, when Bruce was still Bruce, right? He had like the eyes. Mm-hmm. They had like that thing going on. And no, there's a thing, I didn't realize this, but like it's called frozen face. Like they decide that your face isn't going to move, so then you won't get any wrinkles or anything. And it's really big, and like the cheeks are at attention, you know, big
but
and rosy.
But it's weird because it's a weird life choice, because surely those people aren't walking around thinking like no one knows, no one can tell, right? I just look like
No, it's like socially acceptable in their circle,
right? They
to
all
walk
do
around
it.
With that, yeah, looking like somebody just punched you right in your lips.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't look, the fake ass is the funniest one ever. Just this giant thing, and then the legs come out, and there's no like flow where it's the ass into the thighs. They're going to have to start doing like, those people, you're nuts. You're literally shooting a chemical underneath your skin.
But it's also but for whom though? Like, because when you look in the mirror, surely you get freaked out by what you're seeing back. Like, what in the hell have I done to myself? But they seem pleased with the results. But then you go out,
no,
and everybody
knows that's the case. On some level, we shouldn't be making fun of this, because those people, I guess, you know, they have some sort of you know, I don't know, some sort of issue, but like
complicated self-esteem that, like you were talking about, that's the make good for all the beautiful
dude,
people.
Just age naturally. Somebody makes fun of you, go along with it, make fun of yourself. Yeah, I'm a bald looking, what do they call it? Mongoloid, whatever the hell you got to call me. You just roll with it. I agree. I concur. They're like, all right, this guy's all right.
Now listen.
Then you make them feel better about themselves. I don't know what it is, but like going down that road of trying to recapture your, you know, your past is going to lead to a bottomless pit of depression.
That's right, because then you can't stop. Like, or I made this mistake. Now you can't just be like, I'm going to overcome and not do it again.
Like when
you have to keep doubling and tripling, and you have to do that for the rest of your life.
It's the mustache trim where you screw it up, and then eventually you just got to take it all off.
That's exactly what I'm going through right now. Last thing I just wanted to tell you, because you and Conan O'Brien were lamenting that you're redheads and that tormented you. Nothing you can do about it now. Go back 30 years.
I don't think I can do anything about it now. I mean,
no, but 30 years ago. Why didn't you ever watch Santa Claus is Coming to Town? I was just watching that, and then I see, and then
yeah,
I hear you guys belly
me. I'm Mr. Heat Miser.
Not Mr. Heat Miser, the man himself, Santa Claus. He's the young Santa. When we first meet him, he's a redhead. Why didn't that boost your morale?
Claymation?
Yeah.
Was supposed to pull me out of that.
I mean, I would think you would point at that and say, make fun of my red hair, but you're getting coal if you keep it up, you know?
Wow.
Fella, you want to keep making fun of me in fourth grade?
Listen, I know you're saying it loudly, but really think of, you want an 8-year-old me to come with that on the playground? You're getting coal for Christmas? Jesus Christ.
Touche. All right.
Yeah.
You win this
Lord.
Round.
They should send you back in time just to get your ass kicked on a playground for that one.
There he is, everybody. Bill Burr. Hey, by the way, you really are, because, and I know that listening to you, that it's something that you feel is a lost art, is you are in the 21st century on the winner's stand, at least, and we could debate that further, of best late night panel guests. And that is some that, growing up as somebody who was watching VHSing Letterman every night and watching and loving the guys that would come roll through there.
The best one I've seen in recent memory was Vince Vaughn went on the Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon and just put on an absolute clinic.
Really?
Oh, dude, it was like Burt Reynolds level.
Really?
He murdered.
I remember
watching that being like, it was just like, it took me back to 70s talk shows when everyone was because those guys were seasoned and they knew what they were doing. And it's not like they just, you know, nowadays, I mean, it's weird how quick you can get it and how quick you can get there. These guys, you know, they put in their time and stuff. Everybody, men, women, everybody on that show, and they would murder. He came on and murdered him, of course, and then Norm MacDonald. Those are probably my two.
Well, Norm is, yeah, I always love.
Dana Carvey's another one.
He was, yeah, I love these days. Peter O'Toole and Richard Harris going on Letterman.
Oh, yeah.
Jonathan Winters. Remember when Jonathan
Winters? I just love that they weren't ashamed about drinking or anything like that.
Oh, their story. That was what every story was about, how loaded they were. And without those late night shows, you would have just thought that these are the most regal gentlemen on the face of the earth, and that all their stories were about their twisters with their pals. Oh. I loved it. anyway, the great Bill Burr, everybody. Make sure you check out a great show on Netflix. F is for family. So many big stars on that one, too. Including
we didn't even talk about it. We're sitting here talking sports. I'm supposed to be promoting this. Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about it for a minute then.
Sam Rockwell, Laura Dern, David Koechner, Justin Long, Vince Vaughn comes on this season playing Chet. My wife, the lovely Nia, is on doing a voice this year. Trevor Duvall, Mo Collins, Debbie Derryberry just got nominated for an award on some other show that she does. It's just Murderer's Row. It's just Murderer's Row. I know I forgot somebody. Haley Reinhart.
Michael K. Williams.
Yes. Haley Reinhart, who plays Little Bill. It's just on and on and on and on and on. We got so many great people on.
It seems like everybody always says that about animated stuff. It's the most fun to do.
Yeah, it is. It is if you're doing a voice on it. But if you're actually in the writer's room and editing and all that, it's a lot of work. But fortunately, I've just worked with all these great people. Peter Billingsley, Victoria Vaughn. All of those guys, Richardson, and we have a great time. But like any show, on days when it's not going well, it's you know, it's like, oh God, you just got to sit there and push the rock up the hill. I have so much respect for writers and editors and all that now that I already knew it was hard, but now to actually be amongst them, it's just like, Jesus.
What about actors? So because, again, you're in the front runner and you can go see that with Hugh Jackman as Gary Hart back in the 80s when getting caught having an affair would scuttle your political career.
He was the first guy. He was the first guy.
I remember that.
But a lot of people don't know. Like, mainstream media wouldn't cover that. That was considered, no, we can't do that. It's beneath us. We'll be like the Star, the Inquirer. And I guess the Miami Herald was the first ones who crossed that line, and then it just opened the floodgates, and it had a real effect, because somebody way smarter than me was saying how, like, it prevents smart, like, anybody in their right mind is not going to run for that office, just what it's going to do to your family. So I think we've missed out on some potentially great people, you know, or at least somebody in there to make the ones that we picked better, because they had to live up to them. So it's a very, very interesting movie.
Oh, yeah. He's a Gary Hart, the man, is a genius. It's a shame that he didn't get to be in the White House. Anyway, one more question for you is with the acting stuff is you say you have more respect for writers and editors now. Do you now think that it's silly when actors are as serious about the craft, when they talk about the craft and getting he gives Bob De Niro's great because he gives me space to take some chances, or is that silliness and you just go out there and do the lines?
No, I think acting is one of the most disrespected.
Oh, you do? Okay. I was curious
because so many people have, like, basically who weren't actors have gone on and done a good job, and usually they're just playing themselves. So everybody's just like, yeah, anybody can do it. Anybody, it's like, you're not doing what Daniel Day-Lewis is doing. You're not doing what Anthony Hopkins is doing. Like these guys, like Philip Seymour Hoffman, rest his soul. Like what those guys like what they're doing. It's like I can go outside and throw a football. I can throw it to you and you catch it. I can be in the NFL. You know, no, you couldn't. You couldn't. So I mean, I think if you're gonna act and just play yourself, if you have an ability to be relaxed and make the words sound natural, you can come. And of course, you got a great director and the music's there and the pacing, because that's the big thing too, because they make you look great. They can make you look like you know what you're doing. But then to actually, you know, I always bring up this example. My buddy DeRosa saw Travolta one time talking about all his characters, and he was like, Vinnie Barbarino walks like this. The guy from Get Shorty walks like this. Vincent Vega walks like that. We would say, oh my God, he does the walks. I never thought to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, yeah, everybody should walk differently. You're playing somebody different. Anybody I've ever done has walked like me and had a Boston accent. So.
Well, listen, I'm sorry for taking up so much of your time.
No worries.
Appreciate you coming in here. Again, BillBurr.com. Make sure you go there because, like I say, coming up from we have a big audience in Europe, as a matter of fact.
Oh, you do? On the plane, watched Arsenal versus Man United. And I enjoyed it as a stupid Yank.
I gotta go see a Premier League game at some point too. So check that out. Make sure you check out F is for Family again on Netflix. The Front Runner, along with Hugh Jackman, and all things comedy, marvelous stuff going on there. The great Bill Burr, everybody.
You're listening to David Damashek.
And there he goes, out the door, out of our lives, but my heart is full. I thought that was a lot of fun. How say you, Eddie Spaghetti?
I was very pleased. Not only was he gracious with his time, we got about 40 minutes with him. It was a pleasure meeting him, taking a picture with him.
He took a picture with you.
He did, yeah. He's someone I've seen him a lot of times, four or five times, I think. I saw him once back in Newark do his full hour and his Plowing Ahead tour, and then I think I've seen him three or four times out here in the Comedy Store. So I've been lucky. I've been listening to his show forever. F is for Family, I binged it already. It's great. The third season, I think, is the best of the three.
I also told him, and anyone who follows me or you on Twitter, Spaghetti, I pointed out, and I forgot to mention it to him while we were on the air, you always have a hat on backwards.
Mostly, yes.
But today you did your hair.
I could blame my girlfriend. I asked her.
You did your hair for Bill Burr.
I did also on Monday. So anyone that was at the NFL media, NFL Network on Monday saw me wear I had have my hair done. I asked my girlfriend, is it better to go the sports route with Bill, wear a Rangers hat or something and have him strike up a conversation about that, or look presentable? And she was like, no, you can't wear a hat with him. Look nice. Like, so. I don't have a say anymore.
Why does your girlfriend think that Bill Burr would care either way?
I think she doesn't want me to look sloppy in case I got a picture.
Bill Burr certainly strikes me as a guy who would be like, yeah, that Eddie Spaghetti seemed like an all right guy, but the hat backwards, what goes on with that?
But if I look like
any self respect, he's in a place of business.
He looked presentable, so if I showed up like a schlub with like some dumb T shirt and a hat, he'd be like, oh, this guy looks like, you know, he doesn't care about what he does for a living. And so I don't know. It's fine. I dressed up a little bit for him.
So be it. All right, well, here are your tales about meeting with Tom Hanks. You've really been rubbing elbows with Hoi Polloi.
I'm making the most of living in Los Angeles.
Actually, Hoi Polloi is not fancy people. That's the average people. Mm. So now you're back with the Hoi Polloi right now,
yeah.
A.K.A. me. And we'll be back with a new episode. Nay, two more episodes to come. This episode, just a special for you to get the week off right on the right foot there. But we will have our usually scheduled Tuesday and Thursday DDFPs coming up for you with Maurice Jones-Drew, Matt Money-Smith. I think we'll McGinnis is on the books for us. We'll see how that all shakes out. In the meantime, though, great thanks to Bill Burr. Go watch the Netflix series F is for Family. Go get tickets if you're listening from Europe. We're Eddie Spaghetti, MVP, and the rest of the gang, and especially Kent Brown. It's been a thin slice of heaven.